evening, listeners. It is, Tuesday, July the 3rd, 5:17 p.m. You are tuned in to The Pastor Spot, a radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. My name is Terry Tackett. Let me turn it over to the host of the show here, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Terry, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been a crazy busy week. Have you had one of those, maybe?
Yes, I have. I think this time of year is kind of crazy for a lot of people.
We have a booth we set up in the Prospect Park for their 4th of July festival, and also it's our huge fire department festival with the Lions Club, and they serve, they cook chicken all day. The whole town smells like chicken. And it's going to be, tomorrow from 1 through 9 o'clock at night when the fireworks start. So everyone has just been really busy. I'm a chaplain on the fire department, so I've been real busy. But before I get too further, I do again want to remind you, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. We are at 209 East Water Street. Our phone number is 740-494-2222. You can reach us at prospectccf.com. Our service times are Sunday, 9:30. We have a Bible teaching hour, and then we have our regular service at 10:30. We have an evening service at 6:30, along with our youth group, and then we also have midweek services. There's a lot going on. And we have Bible school starting on the 8th, on Sunday night, which is Sunday evening. It'll be every night through Thursday, and it'll be from 6 o'clock to 8:30. And our program this year is called Moose on the Loose. The whole town comes together and does the Bible school together. That's a blessing that we can do that. But we are hosting it this year at CCF, and it has just been a lot of work. A whole lot of work. It's a camping theme. We have, I think just about everyone in town's donated their Christmas trees to put up. So we've got to make this, convert this church into a campsite. We've got a lot of trees and a lot of different props and things, and it's just going to be a lot of fun for these kids. Ages 3 through 6th grade. So I think it'll be great.
Still taking sign-ups on that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. We had our kickoff for sign-ups on Sunday night. And those of you that missed it, I did announce it a week ago. We had a cookout, and that was great. But if you missed it, that's fine, because we take sign-ups the morning of. And also online, if you go to the Prospect Hometown site, or even our church site, we're on Facebook at Community Christian Fellowship. Look us up. All those places that you can find a sign up. But like I said, if you can't do that that morning, or that, I always say morning because we used to do it so often in the morning,
right.
But that evening we'll be taking registrations.
But that might be the easiest way, though, is like a Facebook or something like that.
Yeah, to get it if you wanted to get it done ahead of time, absolutely. So it'll be a great time, really will be. Looking forward to it. Hey, I want to remind you guys, this is a call-in show. So please feel free to call in. And I love to talk to you. I love to field your questions. Even if you have a prayer request that you haven't been able to give to anyone, I would be glad to take that. Remember to be kind and civil and loving, because that's what we're to do as Christians. And we don't really tolerate it much that's not. But not here anyway. We'll hit that off button real quick. But it shouldn't be that way anyways. Good discussion show. Good chance for you to call in and ask questions. You know, to be honest with you, folks, biblical questions, I'll field about anything you want me to. Just don't get too out there.
See, this man has a world of knowledge about that, about that stuff. And also, if they want to leave questions like on Facebook, something like that.
Absolutely. On our Facebook site or with the church.
Yeah.
Call the church. I welcome that.
Yeah.
Just don't leave me too many questions about aliens. I'm not good on aliens. I don't know much about them.
Oh, come on. You don't know about UFOs or anything?
Not too much. And I'm a positive guy.
Yeah.
I don't, that doom and gloom stuff doesn't sit well. You know, it's interesting, Terry, that in Ecclesiastes we read about, we're supposed to enjoy life. We're supposed to go through life and be happy and enjoy life. You know, many times people think of Christians, they look at them as, oh man, these Debbie Downers out there that just always have doom and gloom in their eyes. And that's not really the way we were ever meant to be. Jesus brought us good cheer. and the good news and the good word and the gospel and all those things. You know, there was a reason that when he came into Jerusalem on that colt, that the people cheered and waved and they laid down the palm branches for him to come over. One, they thought they were going to welcome an earthly king, but they had all heard so much of the good that he did and the joy that he brought to people that were blind, people that were lame, people that had all these different infirmities. We're supposed to enjoy life. And I don't think that we're just supposed to be negative about anything. Doesn't mean that we can't be serious, right? It doesn't mean that we can't be very, at times even very black and white on things that we truly are convicted of and believe. But we got to enjoy life. Why would anybody want to be a part of something that you couldn't smile? You know, you greet someone with a smile, you're probably going to get a smile back. If you don't, you just keep right on walking, right? I know that's what I do. Hey, you know what? Tomorrow is the 4th of July. And I know there's a lot of, Kroger's probably got an awful lot of hamburgers and hot dogs and brats going out the door, would be my guess. And a lot, and some of the other stores also, of course. If you're a store and you're carrying that stuff, it's going out tonight. But anyway, everyone's going to be picnicking tomorrow, and 96 degrees, I'm hearing. My wife said before I left today, she said, you know, I've decided tomorrow, see, we always have our kids over. We watch fireworks from our backyard, which we can see them right there in the park. And she said, I've decided that tomorrow I'm going to cook everything inside on low, and I'm staying, you know, I'm not, she said, we're not going to fire up a grill. It's too hot. She said, I don't even want to do it. And it's going to be a scorcher tomorrow, I hear. But it is the 4th of July, and I know there's going to be a lot of entertainment going on and things to do. What's going on here in Marion, Terry?
Tomorrow is the big fireworks display at the fair tomorrow.
Right.
Right. Tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, I believe, tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah, so a lot of events going on at the fair. There's a band. I think they have a concert first, then the fireworks, and
okay.
So all kinds of just entertainment at the fair stuff. A lot of people.
Tonight, I think there's a harness racing tonight.
No, tonight. Where are we? Tuesday. Tonight is.
I know that right now the
right the A-bar bull riding and barrel racing tonight.
Oh, that'll be fun to watch. Yeah, always, I love bull riding.
All those kind of events always seem to draw.
Yeah, they do. Right now, what's going on is the hog show.
Hog show.
The right hog show. Yeah. And matter of fact, my grandson Jonah went up there with a friend of his today to help show him how to show his hog because it's one of the other boys' first year.
Oh, okay.
And my grandson went up to help, and my daughter just left with her kids to go up and watch the hog show.
Okay.
So they're heavily involved in agriculture, and they thought they'd go up to the fair and watch that.
Those kind of shows, I know, always for kids. Always, I love those kind of. You know, I mean, because it gives them some responsibility. You know what I mean? But it also, I don't know, kind of helps them grow. You know, as a person. You know,
and you know now, just like in the regular industries, people have to agree to treat their animals well. They're highly inspected today. There's a real watchdog organization within the associations themselves, whether it's the dairy, the swine, the beef, whatever. They very much monitor their producers and make sure they're doing things well and treating animals well. And one thing nice in the 4-H program now is all the kids have to take quality assurance or they cannot take their animal to the fair. And what that is they have to go to, I know a lot of the schools, ag departments will put one on at their place or the local 4-H building will do it there too. But it's quality assurance. Basically, the kids go in and they are trained how to do a quality job with taking care of their animal. Health issues, feed issues, cleanliness issues, behavioral, how to treat your animal. And these kids have to sit and they have to go through all that and know that before they're ever allowed to bring. If they don't do it, they can't bring their animal
to
the fair.
So it's almost kind of like a classroom setting?
Yeah, it is a classroom setting.
Oh, wow.
And then, like, you know, prior to the fair, we usually have what we call as a skill-a-thon. And I know that I'm usually asked to do the beef Skillathon in Delaware. And it's a week before the fair. What they do is they have the kids come through, and they have a paper that goes from station to station, and they're asked questions about the animal, whether it's feed, body parts, cuts of meat, all these different questions. Then they're scored at the end, and their score, depending on where they place, if they score higher, their animal sells earlier than the animals where the kids didn't score as high. So there's a real benefit to learning these things, because obviously in a sale, the sooner your animal sells, usually the more it'll bring. And that's the thought behind it.
That's the part, I think, of this whole process that I don't understand, is that when a kid shows an animal and they sell it, do they get the money or?
Yes, they do. They've purchased the animal, they fed the animal, they've taken care of the animal. And when that
I didn't
animal
know if it was set up like as a scholarship for or how.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
What a lot of people get confused about, though, to be honest, is that when they look at like the Grand Champion at the State Fair,
uh-huh,
or even some of our local fairs, they can go pretty high.
Okay.
But if, you know, these $20,000-$30,000 steers, that doesn't happen to these kids in 4-H. That's 2 to 3 fairs a year with one kid at each fair out of thousands. And normally what these kids end up with is they end up with what it costs to raise the animal, the cost of purchasing the animal, and a pretty good return on their money to put in the bank for, and to then go back and buy their animal the next year, pay for the feed, for the supplies, and all those things. And none of these kids are getting independently wealthy off this. Now, a lot of times what parents do, if they can afford to do this, is they will take the entire money from the animal, and they'll put it in a fund for college or for their kids when they turn of legal age, no matter what they're going to do. And then what happens is the parents basically will foot the bill for the feed and the animal, and they'll just use that as a savings fund to get the kids to that point. Now, like, I have a son-in-law that went through the apprentice training program with a construction company. He worked at, he went to Delaware JVS, and he took carpentry. Well, while he was still in high school, he went to work for a construction company, got in their apprenticeship program, and planned on being a union carpenter. Well, when he and my daughter got married, he wasn't going to college beyond that. And when they got married a couple years out of high school, his parents then gave him that money, and he was able to use it for a down payment on their first house. So that's what they did with theirs. And now today he is he runs jobs as a union carpenter and does very well. So it's worked out very well for him. But it's just an excellent program. It teaches responsibility. It teaches kids to care for an animal. A lot of kids don't want to see their animals go. You see a lot of tears when those animals are leaving. Those are loved animals. And as to be honest with you, in most small family farms, all the animals are loved. I mean, I can ask my daughter tomorrow, they're dairy farmers, and I could ask her tomorrow, who's your favorite cow? And she can tell me. I don't know who it is right now, but she could tell me who her favorite cow was and why. Uh-huh. And the kids probably all the same thing. Uh-huh. And they really do. They get to know their animals. They can recognize when something's wrong with them, when they don't feel well, when they're not acting quite themselves, just like you would your own kid. And I think good farmers do that. I think that's one of the things that I struggle with as a former farmer myself, in seeing the huge commercial operations, is that personal element just goes away. And you don't have that one-on-one seeing the animal. I know that when I...
Because over the course of time, you know, you've spent so much time with this animal.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah.
I know when I was milking cows, I usually milked in the neighborhood of 80. Mm. And at 80 cows, you're about at your maximum of knowing your animals.
Okay.
And after seeing them twice a day, at least close up in the milking parlor, and then the rest of the time outside, here and there, you begin to know that animal. And if it comes in and it's not eating the way it normally eats, if it's acting a little bit different, maybe it's letting its milk down slower than usual, whatever the case is, you'll pick up on that and you'll think, something's wrong. I better be checking it out. You know, you'll usually find there is something wrong somewhere causing this. And the problem is when you get into these large, large commercial dairies, I mean, those cows are just lined up in a row and nobody knows anybody. You know what I mean? And they come through and you know, you miss a lot of that stuff. And really, our I didn't plan on talking about this much tonight. We've kind of gone down this road. Our family farms are so under attack right now in this country. We have...
Is it, just for you, because I've seen a few things on this, is it just because, like, there's one or two bad apples? You see what I mean on these farms? I mean, you see these horror stories about animals. I mean, that's not the perception of everyone, is it? I mean, it's just...
It can't be.
It's just one or two bad, you know.
It's too closely monitored for that.
That's what I thought, but I mean...
And you're always going to have bad apples in anything. I mean, for instance, to give you an example, because every now and then you hear of a mom that abuses her children, you don't go in and take the kids away from all the moms.
Right.
You know, but we want to tar everyone with the same brush when it comes to the livestock industry. And the thing is, to have healthy livestock... You make your money from healthy livestock, not sick livestock, right? They're going to produce the best when they are healthy, whether it be milk or meat or whatever it is. Because in meat, you need pounds and quality and conditioning. And in milk, you need conditioning and health for them to make the milk that's needed to go. And it has to be good milk. It can't be high in bacteria and high in somatic cell, which would show infection and things of that nature. So... That means you're taking really good care of them. Matter of fact, if you and I paid as much attention to our nutrition, you and I, as my son-in-law John does their dairy cattle, you and I would be a couple lean, mean fighting machines. Because you have to. I mean, the condition of that animal is what makes your money, and how you treat that animal. You want a cow to come in and calmly let her milk down. You know, you go smacking around on an animal, she's nervous, she's not letting her milk down. I mean, all those kind of things. You do have bad apples here and there. But my main concern right now is in talking about this, is our family farms are being pushed out of business. They did it with the hogs first. You know, there's no small family hog farmers anymore. You know, everything went to numbers and high numbers. And the beef industry did it. And the chicken industry definitely did it. Remember the old mom and pop chicken barn where you went and bought your eggs? You know, now what do we have? These giant, unbelievable places. And now they're doing it with the dairy industry. And the sad thing is, like, for instance, if you go to Holland, the Dutch have a quota. And a quota on how much milk can be produced by each farm. Very similar to what we used to have with tobacco in this country, when each farmer could only produce so much tobacco, and it protected the cost within the industry. And they did that with cattle. They did it with cattle in a lot of parts of Europe. But in Holland, they did it. And what happened, what causes that, is they keep everybody's milk price up at a pretty decent standard. It controls the amount of milk on the market. Because if you're only allowed to produce so much, and your neighbor can produce so much, then it keeps that price stable in where it should be. Well, what happened in Holland was, first of all, the European Union opened up this milk market everywhere. And it used to be just places like maybe us and New Zealand and a couple other people were shipping around the world. And we're not just talking about fluid milk, we're talking about milk solids, where there's milk fat, milk protein. Most of our milk, by the time it hits a plant, you see where it says 2% on there, or 1%, or skim? That's because they robbed everything out of it, and it's going everywhere else. It's going into foods, it's going into this, it's going into that, and you're getting left very little of the raw product. But anyway, when they opened this market up, when the EU opened this market up, suddenly they all had huge markets they didn't have before. Well, Holland wanted to protect their little thing at home, so all their farmers still got a good wage for what they produced, and they wanted to protect their quota system. So what they did was they financed Dutch farmers to come to this country and start building what we call mega dairies. And we got one right outside of LaRue. It's Dutch owned. It's a mega dairy, and they've got I don't know. I'm thinking they got somewhere up where 5,000 cows, just outside of LaRue. And they usually do not help the local economy that much because they bring in all foreign and many times undocumented workers. Then what they do is, here's the thing, they don't want to flood their market at home with milk, right? Because they're protecting that quota so everybody makes a decent amount of money. So now what do? They start selling their milk on the open market and making good money, and then they flood our market with fluid milk. And they're flooding our market with fluid milk, and what's that done is it's caused such a glut of milk that there's more than the milk processing plants can handle. And as you've noticed in the stores lately, milk's down to like $1.15 a gallon. There is no small farmer out there that can produce milk for $1.15 a gallon. And that's not even taking into consideration the middleman. I mean, that's just, they can't do it. They're going in the hole every month, and it's a sad thing because these farmers have been doing this for generations, producing a quality product and caring for their animals. And these large, mostly Dutch dairies are pushing everyone out of business.
With these, with the size and everything of these mega dairies, is it almost like a situation too? Like, would they almost have like stockholders to report to? I mean, is that why they have to try to make, you know, money for everybody? Because you said they're getting financed, so they have to obviously pay these people back. Is that right? Is that why? So it's almost like a stockholder thing, like these guys own some stock in them or something. And
well, absolutely. There's some controls there.
That's
there,
what I mean, yeah.
There's some partnerships. They gotta there's some things going
take
on.
Take some money back to Holland or whoever.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And they've got okay. to, they're producing a large, and what they're doing now is they're basically taking over our milk market.
Okay.
And then on top of it,
so that answered the question too. I was wondering about the quality, but you answered the question obviously that the quality is going to be way down if it's.
It's going to be way down. It's going to be way down because you're not going to have as healthy of an animal.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not going to have.
Well, because like you said, you're more worried about money or numbers instead of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Numbers instead of quality. And that's just the way it is. Okay. Another thing that. And let me kind of talk about the general cycle of a cow. Typically, when a cow's 2 years old, she's usually bred right around a year and a half or a little older. Sometime in the area of it being a two-year-old, they will have their first calf. They have a calf. They are milked. They're bred 2 months later. They're dried off. In other words, dried off, so they're not milking them 30 days prior to having a calf, which they're on a nine-month cycle just like a lady is. And 30 days prior to having calf, they'll do what's called drying them off. And what they do is they back off the feed a little bit, and they don't milk them as they milk them a little, and they let them dry up essentially. So they have a period of time for their udder to get healthy. They're put on a diet that they need to be on prior to giving birth again. And then that gives them that rest period. They go ahead and have another calf, and everything starts all over again. So that's how it goes. Okay. And you do that as long as the cow stays healthy. And usually a good cow and a good herd is going to last 8, 9, 10 years. In the wild, she would last probably about 5. But under the care of a good dairy farmer, some last much beyond that. But in the commercial dairy world, the average age of the cow, my guessing is, I'm trying to remember, it's somewhere around 4 years, 5 years, maybe.
That's what I was wondering.
Because what they do is they get them fresh and they milk them 3 times a day. And they push them and they push them and they push them. And in many cases, don't even rebreed them. Just keep pushing them. They'll push that cow to milk for 2 years till she can't milk anymore. And then by that time, they're done with her and she goes to slaughter. And that's what goes on in a lot of these large commercial dairies. And, you know, the consumer is being fooled into believing that, you know, this is the way that it should be, that these large companies are so much more responsible. Well, from my personal experience, I beg to differ. And, again, it's something that a lot of the large chains are involved in also. I mean, Walmart just went through a thing where they decided to cut out the whole middleman and be their own processor. And guess what? They're only taking milk from the large commercial dairies because it makes more dollars and cents for them to go out one stop, get it all, and bring it in. And they also, they just cut off an entire group of people in northeastern Kentucky, I believe it was, and they had no one else to take their milk. It was a whole region. And Walmart cut off the pickup for them, and they came to DFA, Dairy Farmers America, the largest cooperative in the country, and said, DFA, can you pick us up? So we can't do it. We got nowhere to put the milk. We can't buy it and dump it. So we had a whole region of dairy farmers in Kentucky that literally went out of business overnight, generationally. And this is happening across the country, and it's only going to get worse. And it's sad. A lot of people think the bigger, the more control, the more we can, you know, get a more quality product. You know, maybe in some other species. I think the swine industry has done a remarkable job of a healthy product going to market. They have to, because swine pass around so many diseases so easy that they have to be very high quality control to make sure they stay healthy. And also, they don't have them a long period of time. 5 months old, they're out the door. You know, that's all it takes to get them up to meat size for a hog. But with the dairy industry, when you're talking about a fluid milk coming out of the cow, what's it like coming out of the cow? What's it like when it gets in the tank, when it gets to the plant, all those kind of things. And what most people don't understand, too, I think, is that the quality standards that have been imposed on the typical farmer, they see all the organic and non-BST and all this stuff in the health food places. The truth is, most of those things have already been implemented on a regular milk producer anyway. And their bacteria, they have such a stringent bacteria guide that they've got to produce a quality product. They can't have any antibiotics in their milk at all. I mean, it gets jacked. I mean, when it gets to the plant, you know, every tank gets a test tube taken out before it's ever put on the truck. It's labeled with a farm name, the time it was collected, and it goes directly to the milk plant. And before that truck ever gets unloaded, that goes in, and the lab people test it for everything you can imagine. If it comes back high in bacteria, if it comes back to where it has antibiotics in it, or anything that it shouldn't, it gets rejected. And then guess what happens? Now you've got a tank load of milk, maybe a 5,000 gallon tank of milk with several farms on it that somebody's got to pay for because it's no good. So I think the quality control is really, really there. And I think with most things, Terry, to be honest, and man, did we get chasing a rabbit tonight. I wasn't going to talk about this at all. But with most things, just like in anything, you got to do your real homework. Please don't believe the news media. Well, I know we're news media, aren't we? But you know what I mean. Yeah. Don't believe everything that you hear. Because you and I both know from watching television that bad news sells. And they love the stories where somebody's kicking a cow or somebody's, you know, and the truth is that's just not what's common. And it's that way with everything. I mean, parents, do your homework with what your kids are learning. You know, do your homework with where they're going. Do your homework with whose house Johnny's staying at tonight. It all comes back to something that we're not seeing a lot of in this country today, that we need to see a lot more of, and it's called personal responsibility. We're becoming a society that likes to be taken care of. We like to know that somebody's taking care of it for us. Push that responsibility off on someone else and leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know, let me know my paycheck made it into the bank, and I don't want to worry about this.
All I did was drop Johnny off at the house. You know, it's not, I'm not supposed to check up on, you know, or whatever. And
you got him there safe, didn't I?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's the way it's going. I see, you know, it's another thing I see that's just crazy. I see little kids walking all over town that aren't old enough to be walking outside of their yard. And, you know, we do have personal responsibility. But, you know, just like in things that we see and learn every day, we have a responsibility to step up and look at those things that may affect our family, may harm our family, our friends. Like I say, don't believe everything that you hear just because you hear it. You might be hearing something really off the wall. I told you the story last time about the people that heard the Indians were coming and bounced their baby out of the back of the wagon. You know, that whole story is there. You know, that was because they believed what they heard and didn't stop to think a minute, and they panicked. And, you know, we see a lot of that today, but there is a real crisis going on in our country when it comes to the family farm. And the family farm has been the backbone of this country for generations and generations. You know, during the Revolution, it was the family farmer that picked up his musket that he used to shoot rabbits for food or keep wolves away and marched off and left the oldest to take care of, or the wife, take care of what was there. But the farms have always been a real strong thing in this country. A lot of good quality stuff comes out. And a lot of those qualities are being carried over through the 4-H program today and the things they do with animals. If you guys are out at the Marion Fair this week, you know, stop, walk through those barns. Look at the pride in which those kids take care of their animals. And if you get a chance, stop and ask them some questions, because I guarantee you they can tell you all about their animal. And you might even see some young one in there taking a nap with their animal. My kids and my grandkids do now. My kids always did. You'll see them in there sound asleep with their head on the side of a heifer as she's laying down sleeping. But ask them some questions and see how neat it is. And tell them that you enjoy seeing what they're doing. You know, we should take pride in that with our kids. Mm-hmm. If your kids aren't in 4-H band, get them involved. It's a great thing for them. But, you know, like in anything, there's going to be people you don't like and this and that. It's everywhere. You know, go with the good, take the high road, move on. Right? Do what you should do. It's just like with the media.
There's nothing I like more than to see these prize, you know, cows or, you know, or something. I mean, I usually make a point, if I go to the fair, to walk through those barns mm-hmm. on purpose. Just to see, you know, I like seeing the reaction, you know, from.
Yeah, it's really neat. The kids get so excited. I'll tell you what kids really get excited is the kids that didn't spend a lot for their animal to begin with, you know, don't have a lot, and then they end up winning. I mean, you talk about elated, excited kids, a smile from ear to ear. Some kids expect to win. You know, face it, you can buy just about anything today. You know what I mean? And what I mean by that is, you know, you can go out and buy a really expensive animal that's almost guaranteed to look really well. But every now and then, you know, there's a kid that'll come through and they'll win and with something that they didn't spend an arm and a leg on, too. But that's why what I like about the rabbits and the chickens, and you go rabbits, chickens, ducks, turkeys, they don't cost a lot. And it's a pretty even playing field, if you know what I mean.
Well, I was going to ask, too, like a lot of family farms, for example, say it's grandpa's farm and the grandson or something decides that he wants to be in 4-H. They wouldn't have to. I mean, if grandpa just wants to give him, is that okay if he just gives him an animal? I mean,
there are guidelines set.
That's
up.
That's what I was wondering.
That it has to be either one of two things, either on their property or depending on your county and what state you're in, but your county. If it's not in your possession, you have to at least be going there every day to take care of it.
Okay.
And if it's grandpa's animal, and you would have to sign a contract. There will be a written contract that you are leasing this animal for this, like if it's a dairy heifer that will go back to the farm and not be sold.
Okay.
I'm leasing this animal for this period of time for the purpose of using it for 4-H.
I got you.
So it's not just a thing where you can wait till fair day and go find grandpa's best animal and load it up and go. So, yeah, there's some pretty strict guidelines on a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
Doesn't mean stuff still doesn't happen. I mean, come on.
Right.
This is the world.
There's loopholes, I'm sure.
There's loopholes. Just like in You know, there's an awful lot of good news people out there. And then there's those people that like the loopholes and like to skirt around things. So it's like that in anything.
I was just wondering. I was just thinking about that. You know, with you talking about family farms, if that was a common practice, you know, where you know maybe Grandpa talks to the son and says, "Hey, I'm going to give this to you know to Johnny, and you know, and this is his."
Well, I'll tell you what. My son-in-law Corey, his grandfather, who Ronnie Bell, who passed away a couple years ago, Ronnie, with all of his grandkids. He actually didn't do this until his grandkids were old enough to start showing animals. And he actually started his own little herd of shorthorn beef cattle. And his goal was for all of his kids to grow up taking grandkids, taking care of cattle, and taking them to the fair, and then taking that money every year and building up a nest egg. And that's how my son-in-law, Corey, that bought the down payment on the house, that came up through his grandpa's stock. And grandpa gave them a calf each year, but they had to come out and walk it and feed it and take care of it and groom it and learn how to show it and all those things. And then when it went to market at the end of the fair, that money would come back and he'd bank it for them. And but yeah, that's what he did, and it's a great thing to do. Those kids all learned how to be cattle people, and they learned how to take care of animals, and it was a very, very good program for them. And that was something he did as a grandfather. I'm sure over the years it cost Ronnie a lot of money to do that, but it's something as a grandfather he chose to do. And what better quality thing could you do with your kids than something
right,
like
that's
that?
Good yeah so yeah. Well, just the amount of time you get to spend with, you know, and get to see them, you know, grow, you know. And yeah, that's worth its weight in gold right there, you know.
How much time we got left, Terry?
We got about 7 minutes.
Good. Yeah. Let's get, I you know, this is the pastor spot, and here I've been on here as an agricultural guest commentator on
the
agriculture.
Farmer in the dell here for a minute.
Yeah, well, you know, I farmed for a lot of years.
Yeah.
I dairy farmed, and my kids farm, my son Matt, grain farms, my son-in-law John, and you've met John,
yes.
He and Kelly, they dairy farm,
okay,
and they raise some hogs, they have a hog barn also, and so they're pretty busy in that, and Matt's out there. I talked to him today, sounded like he could hardly breathe. I said, "Are you drinking water?" He said, "I'm drinking all kinds of water, Dad," but he said, this is killing me out here, and I don't know what they were doing today, probably hauling grain or moving grain or doing something.
Processing it or something.
Yeah, it's tough work. It's tough work. And people ought to be thankful for what farmers do out there. Yeah. Really should be. I was going to read to you tonight the Declaration of Independence. I'm not sure I have time. But tomorrow's the 4th of July, and I want to read it to you. And if we can do that, I think we've got time.
6 minutes.
I may read fast. So here we go. This is in Congress, July 4th of 1776. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth in separate and equal station to which laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments, long established, should not be changed for light and transient causes. And according to all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object evinces to design and to reduce them under the absolute despotism, It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such a government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of the colonies. Such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused to assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till this assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them, formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with many firmness his invasions on the rights of people. I'm going to encourage you to finish the other half on your own at home. Get on the computer and look up the Declaration of Independence. You know, that took a lot of guts for those founding fathers to do that. And they knew, Terry, that you and I had real rights and they needed stood up for and they needed representation. And today, I'm glad to know many people today that still feel that way and love this country and respect this country and for what it's done. Greatest nation in the world. Always was, and I believe that it still is, but we've got work to do. And I don't believe that is in passing off our responsibility to other people. We need to step up and do what needs to be done ourselves. I was talking to someone the other day about a complaint about a particular election. It wasn't even a public election. It was something else. And I said, unless you're willing to send representatives to vote, you have no reason to complain. We have a wonderful country. Let's support it, right? And thank God for all he's done for this nation and pray every day that he continues. God bless you all. Come to our Bible school. I'd love to see you. Give us a call. 740-494-2222. We'd love to have your kids this year. It's going to be started on the 8th at 6 o'clock in the evening. We'll see you then. God bless you.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking